as a race on this planet, you know, if we go to war. By the way, while we're on that subject, this hour's news is kind of interesting. Pakistani jets shot down an unmanned Indian spy plane late today. And the tension is building again. Now, Pakistan wanted a decrease in tensions, they say, quoting, but if Indian aggression is launched, Pakistan will defend itself. So the tensions over there are obviously extremely high right now. And I thought it would be interesting to hear from Phil Kraft himself on what the Verdant said. And so that's going to be one thing we're going to do tonight. I want to note a couple of things here. One, I've had the link to the UFO, supposed UFO, during the president's speech removed from the website. And that's because I had a whole raft of people who figured it out, including late tonight Richard C. Hoagland. Comment on it earlier, and then he figured it out too, and a whole bunch of people sent me email, and the fact of the matter is, they used an unusual angle, and the president, the camera was actually right in line with the Reagan International, so that was, in all likelihood, not a reflection. A lot of people said, oh, it's a reflection. No, it wasn't. It was probably a plane, because they were right in the flight path of Reagan International. So that would seem to explain that. On the lighter side tonight, and I really mean the lighter side, I found something last night that just from Cornell University that just totally, well, I don't want to give anything away. It's on my website right now. It is the first item under What's New. And I would like you to go and take the test and report to me tonight on how you do. It's simply called the insanity test. Now be sure you have your speakers, your computer speakers, on when you take the insanity test. That's an absolute, you have to have speakers on. If somebody at Cornell put this together, I have no idea how. Whoever did it was genius, really good. And if you can take that test and pass, maybe it should be called the sanity test, actually. You've got to do it. It's probably will make your weekend. The insanity test. On my website at artbell.com right now. Look, we've got this weather forecast here in Perump. Once again, the gods are going to blow hard out across our desert, and we are forecast to have wind gusts to 60 miles per hour tomorrow. Should certainly make it an interesting day, and no doubt more viruses and dinosaur eggs are going to get picked up if this occurs, and along with a lot of lawn furniture. And we saw some pretty weird things after the last windstorm. Pools flying through the air. You know, those rubber pools, well, all the water goes whoosh, you know, and then the pool goes whoosh. And, of course, tree limbs and entire trees and, you know, it was like Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz last time out here. We had 84-mile-an-hour winds. Well, tomorrow, they're starting out now by saying 60-mile-per-hour gusts. We'll see where it goes from there. That's the same thing they said last time. So it's going to be another one of those days. In the meantime, if you will stay right there, I will be right back. And here is Kreskin. Kreskin, hello there.
Art?
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine. Well, last night, Kreskin, I took a night vision camera and pointed it toward the skies of Las Vegas early in the evening, actually about beginning about 8:30, in order to capture what you said was going to occur. And when you came on the program, you said that there would be 3 to 4 craft involved. In the biggest... Let me finish.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. A maximum of 3 to 4 craft, fine. Yeah. In the biggest sighting in a century, and that hundreds would witness it, and it would be the biggest event of their lives, that kind of thing. And that's what you said on this program.
That's right.
And then in an update, you essentially repeated the same thing.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Okay, now, let's shift to what
how
happened.
How long did you have the camera out?
Oh, we had the camera until, gee whiz, past midnight. But
yeah.
Anyway, let's continue. I monitored, you know, I did an hour talking to people phones.
Right.
So that I could sort of get the flavor, you know, of what was going on.
Yeah.
And let's see, at 10:20, approximately, I understand you dropped a couple of hankies, actually 10:15 about, I dropped a couple of hankies, and then you told everybody it was all over and left. And
no, I said my participation was over and I left.
Your participation was over and you left. Yeah, about 10:20, right?
I don't remember the exact time.
Yeah, it was about 10:20.
Was it 10:20?
Yeah, because the people on the phone told me.
Yeah.
About 10:20. Mm-hmm. And actually, I was, in a way, thankful because I had a guest coming on, and I thought, oh, man, it's going to rip, another guest somewhere. So so I had a lot of calls, and everybody said that nothing happened.
They must be embarrassed today, huh, Art?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
No, I don't think so, because you said that...
there'd be hundreds.
Well, you did say that, hundreds.
Yeah, I was wrong. It was thousands.
Yeah, but, you know, you said it was all over at 10:15 or 20, somewhere in there.
I said I had to leave because the documentary people needed to interview me, so I said my participation here is all over.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody left.
You sent me a press release today, or your people did.
Yeah.
You know, your people originally contacted me to get on there, and that's fine.
Right.
And then today I got this press release, and what the press release says in part, quoting you, my original intention was to demonstrate a scenario how an enemy possessing the same skill and abilities as myself might create a mass happening on an even larger scale and over a much greater territorial area, said Kreskin. Now, so in other words, your original intention was deception.
My original intention was using psychological persuasion to show how...
When you came on my show, it was deception.
Well, you could say deception.
I did.
Okay,
so that was deception.
For a reason that was very...
But you know, there's a difference. I have a lot of people on my show. I'm usually a pedong guy, Kreskin. I have a lot of people on my program that are visionaries and psychics and...
Well, I'm not a psychic.
I know. You say you're a mentalist, right? I said you were a magician, then you said mentalist.
Well, I'm not a psychic.
You do say you're a mentalist, right?
I'm a mentalist, but I'm not a psychic.
In fact, you corrected me. Anyway, I have a lot of the program, you must understand, they do claim to be supervisionary, and there are some things in them. But they didn't plan from the beginning to deceive, you know? And so what I think you did is really lame. I'm telling you, face to face, lame, lame, lame. Not only that, but I now understand that you have, you've reneged.
On your deal to give
$50,000. You are not giving $50,000 to charity, right?
The reason is because of the success of the prediction.
Oh, baloney.
And may I finish?
Yeah. Yeah. Finish.
Well, thanks to NBC, and obviously people know about the traffic jams on Las Vegas Boulevard last night. As it turns out, at 11:03.
Somebody saw something.
Well, not somebody saw something. Some 60-some people saw something.
Actually, again...
If I can't finish now.
Yeah, you can finish.
Well, I'd like to finish.
60 people
because,
saw something.
No, it was thousands of people.
On TV, you mean on TV.
But I'd like to finish.
Go ahead.
What happened was that the prediction also stated that the phenomena would take place between 9:45 and midnight. That was the time done many times. And I told the audience in the theater, now you understand, when we went outside, there were about 1,000 other people there who were partying and drunk and so forth. I mean, they weren't even with it. The audience...
Actually, there were thousands. There were other locations where people gathered.
But the people outside did not know what I had told the audience in the theater, and that was that this whole plan was, first of all, to show something that had worried me greatly since 9/11, how ruthlessly an enemy could utilize and manipulate the imagination of people's minds and use it in a very curious manner.
Yeah, but that's what you did.
But I'd like to finish.
That's what you did. That's what you did. You did terrorism. You did terrorism.
All right. But I'd like to finish. I'd like to finish what happened. As I've said since Monday, from a quarter of 10 to midnight was the time spectrum of this whole phenomena. At 11:03, as the crews were packing, now the suggestion I planted in the minds of the 41 people was basically something of a green light type effect, although some people were crying because they felt noise and vibrations and so forth, but that's a very subjective phenomena. 41 because of the nine college students that ran into the distance and came back to the casino.
That's not hundreds.
I'm talking about thousands.
No, you're talking about...
I haven't finished.
Yes, well, okay, so that we might...
I may have finished what happened.
There was an object seen and filmed.
No, there wasn't an object seen. What happened at 11:03, as the crews were packing, is that one of the people glanced up and saw what I had suggested as a green light form, but of course I was inside being interviewed further, starting in the same pattern as the others had hallucinated. At 11:04, a second one appeared, and by thank God, a gentleman from NBC here in Las Vegas, his camera was still on.
Yeah, I know.
So he called, Steve Krupp, he called and interrupted the news broadcast, and literally thousands of people saw this phenomena take place. As a matter of fact, there are two people who left letters here.
Well, you know what, Kreskin? It doesn't matter because you intended to deceive from the beginning.
You may say that, but the truth of the matter is that there were thousands for the first... Where have in history... We've all seen films that can be altered, but people saw this for real because some of the crew called home to tell their families and said, we're watching it, and if anyone saw the playbacks this morning on the news and at noon, it was seen originally live by... Now, in the end... Sure, it may. Who knows what it could be? It could be someone throwing plates at someone.
Could be anything. There were people firing flares.
Well,
the crap going on. My point is that, in your own words, in your own press release today, it was intentional deception.
No, it was not intentional deception.
Oh, yeah, when you came on my program and said what you said.
How ruthlessly people are conditioned.
It was ruthless.
This could have been loyal art, and that needed
something. I had a lady from Channel 41 Television who was there, grabbed a quick interview with you, and she asked you, because we played it on the air, she held the phone up to the recorder, and she said, you know, some poor lady came down here and from Seattle. Let me finish and spent $600 coming down here. And you said, well, I didn't tell her to come down here.
I did not tell her to come down.
Furthermore,
if she stayed, she would have seen the phenomena she was looking for.
But the deception...
If she stayed, she would have seen the phenomena because it was within the framework of a quarter of 10 to midnight. And it did happen within a quarter of 10 to midnight. Had she stayed, as some of the other people did, and who have sent letters to me and called me, she would have seen right there what some 16 newsmen and crew people saw. And I did not tell her to fly in. I did not tell her to fly in.
Kreskin, I know you didn't, but
I would never have suggested anyone do something like that.
Even if you don't give the $50,000, you ought to give that lady her money back.
Perhaps if she flew first class, but the point of the matter is, there was a sighting involving thousands of people, and it was live. And as MSNBC and Fox News, in long discussions with me, verified, it did take place in the hour of a quarter of 10 to 12 midnight.
Yes, it did.
And consequently, I was successful in that part of the prediction came about.
Well, you had planned.
By the way, I happened to have been the night before performing 50, I don't even want to tell you how close to the Twin Towers. 5 days later, I walked there while Regis was coming back towards me, and it's a setting I can never forget.
Yeah, and what you did, no relationship whatsoever, except they're both acts, in my opinion, of terrorism. Take care, Kreskin. I'll tell you something else. I'll tell you something else. I have, in the, all the years that I've done this, this kind of programming, I have never banned but, let's see, one, two, three, or four people from my show. So you can still count it on one hand, but add one. Kreskin, you're banned from my show. He hung up. He's banned forevermore from my show while I do this program. He will never again appear. I know exactly how it came down, and I read his press release today, and in his own press release, he admits that he intended to deceive, as compared to what he said twice on my program, to the entire listening audience. It was, I thought, very clear. Was it not very clear to you? He claims 41 people here saw it. This, again, his own press release, dated today, June 7th, from his office. And it has quotes around his words. Quote, my original intention was to demonstrate a scenario how an enemy possessing the same skill and abilities as myself might create a mass happening on an even larger scale and over a much larger territorial area, end quote. In other words, from the he knew damn well when he came on my program and said there would be as many as three or four craft, it would be the sighting of the century, and there would be hundreds of people involved in seeing it. And he went out there and at about 10, 15, or 20 in that area and dropped two handkerchiefs. Now, he had done some work with an audience and maintained about 300 of that audience inside during a show. And he had been doing a little mental work with them. And I guess the dropping of the handkerchief was some sort of key for them to see something. So his original intent, whatever in the hell happened later in the night after everybody left and was packing up, is completely irrelevant. Totally, completely irrelevant. And I draw a line between those guests that I have on the program who claim to be visionaries or mentalists or psychics or whatever word they use and claim to have had a vision or information come to that, that's come to them that says something or another will happen. Well, if it doesn't happen, at least they came to me honestly. And I don't feel that was the case with the somewhat, in my opinion, very much less than amazing Kreskin. That was not the case. He did not come to me honestly. And yes, I'm pissed. You bet I'm pissed. And he is banned. Banned from this show forever. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast. Try to be true.
Eight-Yard Bell in the Kingdom of Nye. From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell on the Primidio Network.
That's exactly what it is. Phil Kraft, I said the other day, you know, I really have got to have him on. I read this item, which I'll reread here in a moment, and we'll have him on. This is remarkable stuff. Phil Kraft is a remarkable person who worked 25 years as an editor on the Metro Copy Desk at the Los Angeles Times. During that time, he shared in a Pulitzer Prize as a member of the Metro team that covered the L.A. riots of 92. Before his retirement in 93, Kraft had spent a total of 30 years in the newspaper business, starting out as a Cub reporter and eventually becoming the managing editor of a suburban newspaper in the San Fernando Valley, before moving on to the L.A. Times, remained active in retirement as a freelance writer. On June 9th of 97, Philip found himself whisked aboard an alien spacecraft, where he spent the next few days being peacefully indoctrinated into a fascinating new world. He wrote about his experiences in The Contact Has Begun, the true story of a journalist's encounter with alien beings. And we've interviewed him on that subject, and the alien beings that he talked to were the Verdants. And an alarming message last night about what the Verdants apparently had said. And so, in a moment, that and right here. Well, all right. As advertised, here is Philip Kraft. Welcome back to the show, first of all, Phil.
Hi, Art. How you doing?
It's great to have you back. I read something which I understand sort of the way things do made it around the Internet back to you, and you thought was perhaps exaggerated. What I actually read on the air is what you have sent on top or below your bio here,
mm-hmm.
Word for word. Now, you know, the Internet begins to, I guess, you know, blow things up, whisper in one ear and another.
Right.
No, that's what the Internet is. But this is serious enough as it is. As we all know, there's a threatened nuclear war between Pakistan and India. The news tonight on that front is not so good, incidentally. The tensions are increasing because Pakistan jets just shot down an unmanned Indian spy plane, and, you know, it's not good. And so you have had alien contact, apparently, on this subject. Is that correct?
I've had contact. There's kind of a tenuous link that's kind of opened up. It's not really... I'm not dealing directly with them, but I do have I am receiving information from them, although it's a tenuous link, so I'm not actually in direct communication, but I have received some information, and I'm not pushing it because I don't know how quickly it'll close down.
Do you regard this information as we have it here to be probably accurate?
Oh, I think it's authorized, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Sure.
I would rather have you read this than read it again myself. Why don't you just go ahead and read what the Verdants have said.
Okay, well, let's see.
The headline is Verdants Bags Are Packed.
Yeah, right. That was on the book's website, the website that my publisher set up. And it says, and this was May 30th, I believe, or is there 30 days in September? May? 31
right.
days in May, I think there are.
Right.
Yeah, I think it was dated at the end of May. It says, several days ago, I received word that the moment any faction on Earth, be it a government or other geopolitical, social, or special interest group, uses a nuclear device as a weapon against any perceived enemy, the Verdants will be leaving the environs of Earth.
Mm.
There is great concern among the extraterrestrials that in conflicts, mostly, most notably in the Middle East and on the Indian subcontinent, have escalated to the point in recent months where the likelihood of the use of nuclear weapons by one or more of the combatants has become a very distinct and disastrous possibility. And this is in quotes here, if the nuclear virus is unleashed, it will be beyond the ability of anyone to contain and likely will spread across the face of the earth like a pestilence of unimagined horror and proportions, the statement from the Verge says. And then continuing quoting, at that point, we will consider the human race a lost cause and not worth monitoring any longer in the hopes of one day nurturing it so that it could take its place among the intergalactic community of enlightened beings. It will be time for us to move on and leave the species to play out its destiny, which is not very bright at the moment, the statement continued. And that's the end of the quote there. And then the last paragraph says, the statement came to me directly from an official representative of the Verdants, not from a human intermediary, and has been sanctioned by the Intergalactic Federation of Sovereign Planets, and I was given authorization to release it immediately.
That's exactly as I read it.
Right, okay, well...
That's, you know, so apparently it got blown up to they've already left or something like that.
Well, I get all kinds of emails, of course, and people are panicking. People think that that the aliens have predicted, have prophesied that the war is going to break out, and it's nothing, it's not anything like that. As a matter of fact, quite frankly... If anybody has really read the books closely, this is really a reaffirmation or an affirmation of what they've said before, if you can read between the lines. I mean, and they haven't come out directly and said it, but I got that impression, so I really wasn't surprised by this statement. And the statement, I think, involves more than just nuclear war. By the way it's phrased, it says, be it a government or other geopolitical, social, or special interest group. So I think they're talking also about any kind of terrorist group that might plant a dirty bomb or, you know, whatever. So I think it includes any kind of hostile use rather than just routine testing of a nuclear device that they are going to be out of here. And as I say, I think it's simply a reaffirmation because it didn't surprise me. The statement, you know, but I thought, well, I'd put it on the website anyway.
Oh, sure. When you listen to the tone of what was said here,
yes,
it doesn't sound optimistic. I guess that'd be one way to put it. It doesn't sound optimistic.
Yeah,
they refer to the current state of affairs as what, very sad or bad or whatever.
Yeah, pretty dangerous. Yeah, these are kind of perilous times, no doubt about that. I think they, you know, it's kind of hard to say what they're doing. It could be just a kind of a warning, a wake-up call, or trying to shake us up, because it has shaken a lot of people up. People are writing to me and telling me they're crying, they're panicking, why they deserted us, why don't they come down and help us out of our mess?
Well, there's a big one. A lot of Americans, a lot of people, in fact, around the world, think that if something catastrophic happens, like nuclear war, aliens will whoosh down and prevent it at the last second. And that's a poor item to be dependent on from my point of view.
Well, you know, I can only speak for the one species that I've come in contact with. And, of course, other people, thousands of people have come in contact with other species. I don't know anything about them. So I can only speak for this one species. But this one species, the Verdants, they have made it quite clear that they have not come here as our saviors. You know, people think that you're right. They're going to come down here, whoosh down here, and suddenly, you know, resolve all our problems for us.
Save our butts.
And that's really not why they've come. If you really read the book carefully, I mean, yeah, they're compassionate and they're generous and they're moral and they'd like to give us a hand up and welcome us, you know, into the Intergalactic Federation. They're trying to establish diplomatic relations. But when you come right down to it, what you get is a species that's looking out for number one. That's a little harsh. It's self-interest. They don't want an aggressive, warlike species going into space that would threaten the peace or threaten, their planetary neighbors.
Well, if they're looking down on us generally, I mean, not just the immediate threat of the India-Pakistan war, but nuclear proliferation generally.
Right.
What happened in New York, 9-1-1,
right.
and to the Pentagon, and all the rest of the whole mess we've been through.
Yes.
They can't be in a real good mood.
No, they, as a matter of fact, my last book that came out last year based on my contact with them in January of 2000 was based upon that's exactly what they were discussing at that time. In January of 2000, they were discussing some very serious issues. You see, they felt we were on a road to rehabilitation. They really felt that while we made, that once the Cold War ended, that for the first time in world history, and I think a lot of people felt the same way.
I sure did.
For the first time in history, we really have a chance for world peace. These two great armed camps have decided, you know, they're not going to, you know, threaten each other and rattle their sabers every day.
It was certainly a step for mankind, no question. The wall came down. The number
right.
of nuclear weapons is being reduced. It looked pretty good.
Right, and they really felt that we were, if we weren't going to be transformed, we weren't going to go through a transformation, but we certainly probably would be marching to the beat of a different drummer going into the new millennium. And then suddenly, all these ethnic and religious heads started spilling up again, and they just became. Wars all over and killings and all kinds of stuff. This was really very very violent. You know, if anything, it looks like we were going towards Armageddon rather than marching towards peace. A rehabilitation.
It looks that way.
Yeah, and so yeah, they weren't happy. So they discussed that, and then, but actually, I don't know if you're familiar, you're aware of it, but I don't know how much you read on the website. But last August, I got word that this is August 2001. So they had been discussing these issues in January of 2000. And they were going to make a decision then. Well, in August of 2001, I finally got word that they had decided that the contact will go ahead, and I was elated. Because it was just we came so close. They said, okay, it's going to go ahead, and it was supposed to start at the beginning of this year. And then 19 days later, September 11th happened.
Kaboom! Yeah.
And
that's
then
right.
they decided, okay, let's take a step, let's step back, keep them at arm's length for a little bit here, and see how things are going to shake out. You know, are we going to get through this thing, or are we going to incinerate ourselves?
You know, there's so many different ways of looking at this. I mean, some people would obviously say, even if they didn't step into the middle of the beginning of a nuclear war and, you know, blow up the missiles or whatever, so there was no catastrophic event, even if they didn't intervene in that way,
right.
coming down now, or coming down, say, since September 11th,
right.
might have some sort of unifying effect on the entire world that actually might prevent something like this from occurring. I mean, a person could think that.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And actually, if the people who write to me and make this argument, I can't help but agree with them. But then all I can do is repeat what I've been told. Mankind's destiny is in mankind's hands, and that they are not here as our saviors. And I think this is not only a practical policy, but I think, quite frankly, there's some religious belief behind this.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And I don't remember, I was talking to my publisher the other day, we were discussing this, and I said, I don't remember if I put it in the book. I know I had it in my notes, but
religious.
We had a discussion on this one time where they take a real, real long view of people's religions. They have great respect for people's religions, and they themselves are religious.
Mm-hmm.
And do not get involved in make any judgments whatsoever on how people worship. And I think, if I remember the discussion, that one of the reasons they don't interfere is that they feel that God has a plan for every species, and that They don't know what that plan is. They don't know what God's plan is, let's say, for the humans, whether we're supposed to,
You cannot imagine how interesting that is. You're suggesting they believe in a creative force.
Yes, they do.
How did you discern that from them?
We had discussions, and again, I don't remember if I put it in the book.
Would be a big one to miss.
I know, and I'm trying to think. I'll have to go back. I know, I remember the conversation, quite frankly. That was that time when I was in with these aliens, when I was not, when I was kind of frozen out of the dinner meeting with the humans who were up there, who didn't want me to kind of, associate with them. And so we had these discussions where I discovered their sense of humor. We discussed, we discussed invisibility and reincarnation. We discussed all kinds of stuff in this kind of informal little. And we had a heck of a good time.
Well, gee, you don't get into much of a conversation about reincarnation. We talk souls and creators and the nature of the universe.
Yes, that's true. And, as I say, I think this is when that conversation in which they said that, I'll look for it. If I remember the conversation, it was that maybe God's plan is for us to be tested and to see if we have what it takes to survive in this very, very cold, harsh cosmos where life is, life is tough. Life is tough all over.
Otherwise known as free will, I guess. Huh?
Yeah, it's the laws of nature. I was just watching TV, the Discovery Channel stuff. I found out that if these figures are correct, 99.99% of all species that ever existed on Earth are extinct. Well, that's just the laws of nature. That's a fact of life.
99.9%.
I heard it on the Discovery Channel on one of those documentaries they have. Of all the species that have ever lived on Earth are extinct.
Hmm.
So there's an awful lot of animals. Well, you're talking about microbes and sea urchins and animals like that.
Still, it's a bunch.
Yeah, it is an awful bunch.
So then, basically, their position would be if we go to that kind of horrible war, if mankind does,
doesn't even have to be war.
Then we're simply not worthy of inclusion in a larger federation of intelligence that is out there.
At this point, and I think at this point they said that they're out of here. I think probably they would continue to monitor us, but I think the efforts to establish diplomatic relations would end until such time as we, if we survived, if we didn't...
Climbed out of the rubble?
Yeah, if we didn't incinerate ourselves and we got through this thing and we evolved and we could, start showing that, we don't have to be hitting each other over the head all the time. If we stop the killing and stop the fighting and start respecting others and show some tolerance... for other religions and races and ethnic groups and other cultures. And because that's basically, people ask me, what can we do? I'm so sad, I've been crying and crying. I said, I know what the answer is, but unfortunately, I can't get anybody to, we can't get anybody to,
listen?
Well, not just listen, but to implement it, I guess.
All right, on that thought, hold it for a moment. It is the top of the hour. We'll break and bring Philip Kraft back for one more segment. I'm Art Bell. From the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM.
You showed me how to do exactly what you do. How I fell in love with you.
Wait a Wait a minute. This is way too good to waste the first words. Well, let's begin again, shall we? Just says it. It says it so well. Just so, do it again here.
I know you can see me. Now here's a surprise. I know that you have, cause there's magic in my eyes.
Magic.
I can see
for you. Good morning, everybody. How are you? My guest right now is Philip Crabb, and you know, when somebody with the bona fides, this man has, comes with a story like this, wild as it may be, I think you all should listen, and I certainly am listening. I mean, this is a man who was right at the copy desk of the L.A. Times for 25 years. Nothing but straight-on journalism, folks. Part of a Pulitzer Prize team. A wild story. Yeah, pretty wild by, you know, straight news standards. But since when did we ever adhere to those here? Now, once again, here is Phil Kraff. Phil, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Art.
So, you know, just so there are going to be some people out there that tonight, because of the new affiliates and whatever, are hearing you for the first time. Give us a real quick version of the original contact with Phil Kraff, the retired L.A. Times newspaper guy, huh? What happened? Just the real quick 101.
Real short version.
Sure.
Real short version. Mainstream guy, didn't believe in this stuff. Retired from the LA Times after 30 years in journalism, in 93. In 97, I had my own experience that I had been reading about other people that I didn't believe. Now I was a believer.
What happened to you?
I was taken aboard a ship, as many thousands of other people, also have, been.
Taken from your bed?
From my bedroom, yeah.
Bedroom, okay.
Right. I was thought I was there for an examination, but because that's what most people reported they were there for. By the way, the only difference between me, or one of the few differences between me and most other people, is that I simply happen to have written about my experiences. Most other people haven't written books about their experiences. So there are thousands of others also. But anyway, I was found out, I was recruited to help do a supporting role in an effort to establish diplomatic relations between aliens, this species of aliens,
and us.
And the reason that they're doing that, they are now choosing now to do that, is that this is the way they work. When a species is on the verge of going into deep space, it's at that point that they make contact and they establish diplomatic relations if they can. If they can't, then the species doesn't go into space. They keep them isolated.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very, very important piece of background and message, you know, that we just heard in the last half hour.
Right.
Very important. Now, at the time they contacted you, they apparently had Mr. Sinatra's high hopes.
Yes.
For us.
Yes.
And we were beginning to look pretty good.
Yes.
And now we've gone and blown it, or we're very close to blowing it, and it could certainly go that way easily, couldn't it?
It could go that way, but you know what? I really do want to emphasize, because people are misreading it, they're getting it secondhand, and they're sending me emails. They think that the Verdants have made a prediction that there's going to be a nuclear war.
Not true. Not true.
Not prophecy. They simply said, basically reaffirmed what they were implied before, that, look, if you people are going to get involved in this sort of thing, we're just going to pull away.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is any chance that they would conclude that we are not indeed not fit to be in space, deep space, and as we would begin to take steps to go to deep space, after they've made their decision, they would have to physically, in some manner, prevent us from leaving our little contaminated island here?
Well, I think they made that pretty clear. That's exactly what they do. They say if the species is going to pose a threat, if it's going to take weapons into space, if it's going to pose a threat to its interplanetary neighbors, it could pose a threat, that they simply don't allow it. Now, they don't use weapons themselves, and they don't get involved in violence, and they don't hurt people, but they have ways of setting science back several hundred years if they have to. They can do it. They've demonstrated it to me. Well, at least told me how they did it, and it sounded reasonable. Quite frankly, I don't think we're going into deep space unless we pass muster and we do establish the diplomatic relations, and we're accepted into the intergalactic community of enlightened beings. And even then, there's a probationary period.
Did they suggest to you at any point how common life is everywhere? In other words, is life all over the place? Is it a fairly rare thing?
You know what? We really didn't. I don't remember discussing that with them at all. They did say that they have. There are 27,000 member species in their organization.
That's pretty big.
That's actually not very many at all.
Still a lot more than the UN.
Yeah, that's true. And that's from as many different planets. Now, also, you know, the cosmos is a very, very large
big place.
So they would not be able to explore anything but a very, very, very small portion of it. You know,
Phil, did they give you any indication at all of the species that they have studied? You know, 27,000 got in the club.
Right.
You have to presume a large number did not. And that might tell us something about our odds. I mean, is it one in five that gets in and four or five blowing themselves up?
Well,
or?
they didn't give me any figures like that. But they did say, I think if I remember, and it's in the book, if I remember, there's about 200 species right now that are currently isolated who have the capability of going into space. If I recall, I'd have to go back and look at my notes. Or,
maybe quarantined would be a good word.
Yeah, quarantined, I guess. Yeah, oh. Right. They use the word isolation. They isolate them. But I guess quarantine is a good word too. About 200 species right now. I don't know what. But they said also that there are a number of members in the organization who had been quarantined at one time. Isolated, and who have got their act together and have proved themselves worthy of being accepted, and so they have been accepted.
So in other words, they might stop back to see if anything crawled out of the ashes other than cockroaches.
Well, even if we don't completely annihilate ourselves, incinerate ourselves, I think they're going to still be watching to see what goes on because, in the future, I think as we evolve, if we continue to evolve and don't ourselves, well, I think we're going to evolve to that point where we can. You know, basically, a lot of people writing to me, they say, you know, what can we do? What is the answer? You know, what is the problem? It's quite simple. I was mentioning it before the break.
I feel very perilous.
Yeah, I know, but to verbalize it is quite simple. And most of the problems in the world today are a result of intolerance. One group being intolerant of another group's beliefs. An intolerance for diversity of beliefs. What's the answer? Stop fighting. Stop killing each other.
That's a nice answer, but, you know, Al-Qaeda and this group that blew up our buildings and so forth, they only seem to really want us dead.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, when you get fanatics like that who believe that their group has God's blessing to rule the world.
Oh, everybody goes to war with saying God's on my side.
Yeah, right.
Everybody
you
does.
Know, what are you going to do? You know, so anyway. As I say, it's very simple. Hey, let's stop killing each other and start talking and have respect for other people and respect their opinions and their beliefs.
Mentioned earlier that thousands of people have had the experience or one like you had. And that's absolutely true. Obviously the reason you're heard is because here you come from the LA Times, right? I mean, that's going to get you in the door right there. And you're saying something you know, to a lot of people, it's absolutely incredible, unbelievable what you're saying, that you were up in an alien ship and had meetings and
right.
they imparted all this information. I mean, far out there for most people.
That's pretty wild.
But this gets you in the door and heard where perhaps others are not heard, except who might get through open lines on my show or something like that. But otherwise, they're not heard on a national basis or international.
That's true. My credentials...
open doors.
They do help, yeah, right. But it doesn't make me that much different from a lot of other people, except the fact that I wrote a couple of books and other people have not read.
Although maybe that's what the Verdens thought. Maybe the Verdens thought that, you know, we've done this so much and we get so little from it. Why not pick somebody whose voice will be heard?
Well, I think, I think they probably figured it out. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
But they did take anonymous people before. Of course, I'm also anonymous. I'm not one of the ambassadors. I'm what they call a deputy envoy. The important people are the ambassadors, and they're recruiting them to help lay the groundwork. And, you know, it's really not...
Was this message, Phil,
yeah.
a direct communique, do you think, to the ambassadors? In other words, giving them the... Or was that just for domestic total consumption? Do you think the ambassadors received specific instructions different from this?
I just can't say. I do know that they probably are more in contact with the aliens than I am. I got that indication before that they have more... you see, I've had difficulty... I've tried to establish communications and have not been very successful. And when they want me to have information, somehow they seem to get it to me. And that's what has occurred in this situation here. Information has gotten to me. So there's, as I say, there's this tenuous conduit that has kind of open, but I'm not actually exploiting it by saying, okay, I got the line open, you know, now quick get in a whole bunch of questions and start to, engaging them in conversation and everything else. I don't want to push it, so I just kind of wait because I know that the conduit is open right now. I don't expect it to last much longer, and this information came to me along that line, you know. So
this would be a rather sad event for the human race, not only what would occur here on Earth, but the loss of the opportunity for contact now. Who knows? In their time, they might not come by for a few thousand or a million more years.
I just don't know. I just don't know how long it would take, for us to evolve. You know, I still remain optimistic. I believe, I hope that we're not going to have, a nuclear exchange of any sort.
We all hope that.
Yeah. Right.
Phil, do you think that if there is one...
Mm-hmm.
Or if there is another major, say, a biological attack, all of this stuff they say is possible and warn us about now,
right.
that the Verdens would say, goodbye, see you down the road a few thousand years, or some message like that, or they would just be gone?
I think they would make it, I think they've made it pretty clear that they would, I'm looking for the right word here.
Leave.
I'm not sure they would actually leave, because I think they have to keep an eye on us to make sure we don't go into space.
Anyway, they'd make the executive decision.
I think they would stop. I would think they would stop any contact with us, and they would just give up on any effort to establish diplomatic relations because they wouldn't want them at this point. Just like India and Pakistan. I don't know. I don't presume they have diplomatic relations. I'm just guessing. I don't remember reading about it in the paper, but I would just guess at loggerheads, and they simply are not talking.
Right,
and I think they would stop talking to us, but they would. I think they would still be in the neighborhood and keep an eye on us because if they're going to isolate us, they're going to have to take down a few satellites that scientific satellites that are important to the space program and things like that.
And they would certainly be capable of doing that much more if they wanted.
Sure. I don't think there's any doubt.
Was there ever during your contact with them, were there dire warnings from that?
Well, there are factions among them that became evident on my second visit, and I named a couple of the characters. And there are factions who do believe that we are not ready. But the decision came down to go ahead anyway in August of 2001. They overruled this faction.
And by now the factions are probably saying, we told you so.
We told you so, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. I think there, you know, there are even actually some ambassadors who believe that we just haven't measured up. It just hasn't worked out and that we're not ready yet. Yeah.
Are you going to write another book? Are you going to continue to give talks? What are you going to do?
Well, I'm thinking of another book, but you know, I have to have something to write about. And, you know, if I had another experience, and I don't know that I ever will. I never know from one day to the next. You know, if I'm ever going to see them again. You know, because it was like. The first time was in 97. There was 2.5 years went by before I even heard from them again.
Well, I suppose if something awful does happen, you can write something that would be titled What Could Have Been or something like that.
Yeah, if I'm still, you know, if I'm Los Angeles, you know, if Los Angeles survives,
yes,
you know, and my computer survives, you know, I suppose. I'm always thinking, okay, what can I write about now? Because I do like to write. You know, what can I write? But I don't, at the moment...
Even after you had contact, Phil.
Right.
How long did you think about it before, I mean, somebody with your background
right.
writes a book like this? How much thinking about it did you have to do before you finally said to yourself, now the hell with it, I'm retired, I'm going to just tell the truth?
Well, I really didn't give it to... my hesitation actually was up there because I first refused to do it. I said, no, I don't want to get involved in that. You know, I got too much to lose. Because people, there's still a stigma attached to this.
I know.
There's 50% of the people or more in the country, I would guess. I mean, I'm just guessing. I don't know the exact figure. Who think you're loony. You know, talking about this sort of thing.
I know.
I received letters from some very, very high-powered, important people. I mean, you know, not world leaders or anything like that. I'm talking about people in the community, you know. This medical doctor, you know, he is interested in this sort of thing, and he told me that his wife says, don't tell anybody you're interested in this or reading books about it. Don't let them know about it, you know. I've heard from several physicians. I've heard from professors at major universities. More and more credible people are coming out these days that would have come out 10, 15, 20 years ago, in which they would have put you in a rubber room. You know, you talk about this sort of thing, you're a certified wacko.
That's right.
I think getting more and more acceptance, but it's slow. It's slow. And, you asked me how long did I take to think about it. Well, once I got back, I already made up my mind to do it. I knew I was going to pay a price. There's no doubt about that. But I knew that I also was retired, so I didn't have to worry about the ridicule and the derision at work, and I didn't have to worry about, you know, getting knocked off my career track or anything
like
that.
Yeah, but there's still 25 years of colleagues there that are going to be looking at your work. Half of them, by your own estimate there, probably going, poor Phil has cracked up on us.
Oh, absolutely. What's he smoking these days?
Yeah.
You know. Oh, more than half, because these are newspaper people. And newspaper people...
Hardcore.
Yeah, very hardcore. I mean, I was one of them. I was one of them.
I know. Yeah. All right, look, the book is The Contact Has Begun, The True Story of a Journalist's Encounter with Alien Beings. I recommend it to you all. We have a link on our website to Amazon.com when you can buy it. And, Phil, we're going to have you on again.
Okay, Art.
But, we set an hour, and we'll hold it to an hour.
Gotcha. Talk to you later.
Thank you, my friend.
Okay, bye.
Good night. That's Phil Kraft, and there you have it from the man who wrote it. And essentially it is that Verdon's bags are packed. I mean, that's pretty serious news for the human race. If so, thought you'd want to hear it from Phil. Then it was not a very good job, I would say, because it wasn't hundreds, and hundreds were required, or he was going to give 50,000 to charity. Now he's decided he's not going to give $50,000 to charity. Well, so be it. To me, that's the end of that, you know? It's the end of that, and I don't want to talk about that. The El Nino in our Pacific is building. Now, temperatures are increasing right now in a large portion of the Pacific, including along the coast of Ecuador, Peru, temperatures up 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit, which is actually a lot. It represents a, quote, significant transition, end quote, from local warm areas earlier in the year toward a more extensive basin-wide warming type typical of El Nino. So we've got one going. We'll see what happens. There is now drought across much of the U.S., very, very serious drought across a whole lot of the U.S. As a matter of fact, drought emergencies have been declared in many parts of the country. So in a moment, we'll come back and we'll jump into open lines, and anything other than this Kreskin thing is open open for comment. Here we go into the unknown. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir.
My question is, over all the years that I've been listening to your program and listening to others, I've always wondered whether there was really aliens that come from another place or not to get here. And I've been recently thinking that if there is, and I'm sure somewhere out there something exists besides us.
But it seems like a good bet, doesn't it?
It sure does. The one question that I would have, though, is how are they here? In other words, I'll give you an example. If I was an alien, which I'm not, and I had a spacecraft and I was going to do space travel, and I looked up into the sky through whatever means I had, and there was millions and millions and millions of stars surrounding me in one direction or another, how would I know which one to go to when I had no means of communication to get there if I had the means to travel fast enough to get there because of the distances?
Well, let me try and answer that part.
All right.
You would look for suns, you know, stars.
That had a
suns,
solar system.
That had planets that would likely harbor life. Even our astronomers are capable of beginning to be capable of doing that. So you wouldn't have to be too much more advanced, you know, with space flight that would get you here to be able to make that determination. So you'd look for planets like ours, I guess.
Now, the next question would be the distance. There isn't anything that's really any closer than about 4 light years from where we're at. Say, I think it's about 4.5.
Right.
So, and we don't know if there's a solar system there or not, or do we?
Well, we know, for example, there would be some things that would be that could be done if you could get up near the speed of light. You could travel to some adjacent systems that hold some promise. Zeta Reticuli, for example.
Right. How far away is that about?
I can't remember. It might be 30, 40, 50 light years. I don't know. I don't remember it. But you know something that.
Yeah, but how could people when something like that guest you had on last night, I believe it was. It was talking about those spacecrafts that were so small that you had to say be half the size as we are. How could they travel in space for 30 years?
You know, only, obviously, I mean, in those cramped quarters, give me a break. Maybe those craft were brought by other craft, larger craft. We have no way of knowing, and or maybe they exceed the speed of light with the, you know, the kind of drive systems that he was describing, in which case they'd get here pretty quick.
Well, yeah, if they can exceed the if they can go faster than the speed of light, like say maybe 10 times faster, because I don't see how anybody could be in space traveling.
The other thing is, I don't know if you're a Star Trek devotee or not. Do you ever watch Star Trek?
Oh, I've watched it since it's first come on, since 66.
Okay. Well, there are many who believe that space can, in effect, be folded. You know, like, just imagine You take a sheet of paper. A lot of modern physicists believe this. Take a sheet of paper.
Right.
And if an ant gets on one side of the paper and you just hold the paper out straight and the ant has to crawl all the way along across the paper to get one side to the other, it takes them a long time. But if you fold that paper together, then all he does is jump from one
side to the next.
Yeah, and you've really gone a century.
Well,
all
if that can be done.
Well, that's the theory.
You know, that would be. Oh, can I make one other comment?
Yes.
I've listened to a couple of guests that I believe your side partner, George Norrie, who I think is very good.
Thank you.
Had on.
I do, too.
He's very good. And they were talking about the pyramids, some of them being built, and the Sphinx being built,
yes.
20,000, 30. My question is this. If Adam was the first person on Earth, and he existed approximately 6,000 years ago, then that would mean that nothing could have been done before that. Am I making sense?
Sure.
Because it wouldn't.
I mean,
been
if Adam and Eve did their thing 6,000 years ago, right?
Yeah, and they were, according to the scriptures, I believe, and some of the preachers.
Well, a lot of fundamentalists believe that, yeah.
Yeah, they existed about 6,000 years ago. Is that fair or not?
Well, it's
we don't really know for sure, but
it's what some fundamentalists believe.
Yeah. So if that were true, then there couldn't have been much that occurred on this planet other than historic type. There wouldn't have been any cavemen.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, I have a very, very difficult time getting next to that concept that it all began 6,000 years ago. And I know there are many very articulate people who make arguments, and pretty good arguments, that it did all begin 6,000 years ago. It's just that there is so much real hard science that tears that to bits. In fact, actually, now the pendulum is swinging virtually totally in the other direction, and we're beginning to find signs of prior civilizations, and we're beginning to dip back into first tens of thousands of years, and then hundreds of thousands of years, and by golly, if something's down 2,200 feet off the coast of Cuba, millions of years, perhaps. Now, I'm glad you said what you did about George Norrie. I think he also is a very, very, very capable fill-in, and so I would like to announce something that I'm going to do that might strike some of you as strange, but it kind of isn't. As you know, I've had a very, very difficult year, and it's like God's had his foot down on me. I've been waiting for him to lift it so I could crawl out. You know, we had a lot of back trouble. I had a lot of back trouble, and that kept me out for a while, and then I had some mysterious godforsaken disease, no doubt blown in by the same stinking ill wind that's going to blow later to tomorrow, my time zone. And then my wife had it, and an asthma attack and all the rest of it. So, you know, I missed some time. But coming up June 20th, which is, I think, 3 days after my birthday, June 20th, I am going to take a vacation, a real vacation, not one where you're screaming because of your back and not one where you have a fever of 103 or 4, but a real vacation, despite the time that that I took off. I'm going to take an actual vacation, and I'm not going to fly anywhere. I'm going to, Ramona and myself are going to take, you know, maybe a day or two away at a time and, you know, go to some close locations and try and enjoy ourselves and just have some real honest-to-God, healthy R&R. And during that time, the exceptionally capable George Norrie is going to take over. So that'll be from about June 20th through the 1st of July. Now, let me add something here. In the broadcast business, a survey goes on literally all the time, the entire year. There are spring, summer, fall, and winter books, so-called, by Arbitron, and they measure audience, you know. So it's very important that you be here. There is one and only one time of the entire year that there's not an Arbitron underway. Or in TV, they'd call them the sweeps. The only once in the whole year that it's not underway, and that time is roughly between June 20th and July 1st. So in that time period, you get the opportunity to enjoy George Norain. George gets it. George really gets it. George is a pretty cool guy. Of all the people, and we've had some very capable hosts in here over the years, I would say perhaps better than any of them, George gets it. And that's the only way I know to put it. He gets it. He's new at it, but he gets it. And that's really important. So George Norrie will be here from June 20th through July 1st. Just thought I'd let you know. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
I called to say how much I enjoyed hearing Ramona on the radio last night.
Oh, yes. Well, you
and
know, she...
Do it again more often.
Well, I try. I try and get her on when she gets really excited and there's really something where, you know, you kind of need her voice.
Yeah.
Because she's a witness of something. Then she's... If I push her a little, she's willing to come on. And I always have to push a little, but she has a great radio voice.
Yes, she does. She really does.
And I'll tell you what I'll do. She has a very good friend named Evelyn Paglini, who is a witch.
Yeah.
A witch. And we'll have them do another program together one of these days.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah, how are all your cats?
All four of them are just spiffy. Just spiffy.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, I just called to add that.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Take care. They're fine. Our news cat... Yeti, he's an amazing cat. His entire life is devoted to play, and he plays hard. I mean, you can get into a pitched battle with Yeti, and it makes his day. And he will come for you as hard as you come for him, if not actually harder at times. He is an amazing cat. Now, all of our cats are well. Yeah, Abby, who very nearly died, Abby had used up one of his cat lives, is particularly healthy. Since he had his near-death experience, he actually did stop breathing. It's a whole different story. He's come back. He's trimmed down. His gray hair has gone away. His shiny black hair, it's absolutely amazing. I mean, it's just amazing. So he is once again among the healthy and wealthy in cat food and cat toys and that sort of thing. West of the Rockies, you are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine.
Basically, the reason I called is to vent. You're a good show to do that on. To a local teenager who needs a double lung and liver transplant.
Wait a minute, slow up. Local teenager who needs what kind of transplant?
A double lung and a liver transplant.
A double lung and liver?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
He has cystic fibrosis.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And anyways, the insurance company will only cover $250,000 of it, and it's going to cost like $500,000. And we're like, hello, you care more about money than a human life? I mean... I could see if it was one transplant, yes, but there's three transplants. It should be three times as much money. Anyways, so we're trying to raise the money. Would it be all right if I gave the website out of the air?
No, I can't do that. What you can do, though, is email me the website, and I'll review it, and if everything is legit, I'll put it up.
All right.
All right?
Okay.
You have to understand that just because we've been...
I do.
We've been fooled a few times.
Yeah, it's fished last night. All right, thanks.
All right, you're very welcome. You just go ahead and email the website to me, and I'd be glad to review it. But on occasion, as innocent as one URL may sound on the air, when it's actually engaged by the people who just heard about it, they find, you know, something awful or pornographic or something. And I'm sure that's not the case, but... when that happened, we made that rule immediately that we don't just allow random URLs to be given out on the air for that exact reason. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hi. This is Jason in Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jason in Pennsylvania. How you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Turn your radio off, please.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's always number one.
Oh, I was just calling just to say, because your announcement you just made about George Norrie.
Yes.
I love you, Art, man, but I don't know about George Norrie.
Well, give the guy a break. He's new.
Oh, I know. I have
listened to many hosts fill in on this program, and we've had some good ones and some not so good ones and some mediocre ones and the whole range. I just think that George basically gets it. So to me that's really important because I haven't said that of too many of the rest of them. Their approach has been one way or another, but they don't quite get what the program's all about. George gets it. So cut him some slack, and I think you'll find out.
Definitely.
I think you'll find out.
I just enjoy hearing you because you're knowledgeable about all kinds of things, and I just enjoy your kind of interviews.
Well, you know why that is?
Why is that?
Because I'm old.
Exactly. You're wise. Old and wise, and it's great. I love to hear you, man. You have a good night.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Take care. Yeah, I mean, and that is what it boils down to. I have been doing this so long now. I've been actually doing talk radio. I've been trying to think. 25 or 30 years straight on now. That's a long time to be doing talk radio. And I don't necessarily have a great deal of knowledge, but I have a great deal of experience. And that is seen by some to be wisdom. I'm not even sure it's wisdom. It's just a hell of a long time doing this kind of program. But I tell you, in George Norrie, I hear the seeds of me about 20 years ago. Now that's my point. I'm Art Bell, and from the high desert, this is Coast to Coast AM, raging through the nighttime.
From west of the Rockies, dial 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. Or use the wildcard line at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903.
Good morning, everybody. It is a Friday night, Saturday morning. It is actually my favorite night of the week in a lot of ways. We do a lot of very, very serious interview work during the rest of the week, and then come Friday night, Saturday morning. Usually, we just open up the lines and see what's out there. So anybody with anything really unusual for us, an unusual story is always welcome here. Is welcome to pick up the phone and begin dialing. More of whatever is out there in a moment. All right, let's rock back into the night, shall we? Where to begin? Let's start here. First time caller line, you're on the air, top of the morning. Hello? Going once. Going twice. Gone. Wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hi.
How are you this morning?
Fine.
Great. Perhaps, sir, at the beginning of your show, you were talking about the Verdians.
The Verdians, yeah.
Yeah. I was sitting here and it sort of hit me. I thought, geez, maybe that's us.
You mean maybe we're the Verdens?
Yeah.
Well, that's something you can't rule out. I mean, there is this consciousness thing and non-locality that everybody's now, scientists are all talking about. And, yeah, maybe the whole experience that Phil Kraft had and others have had actually comes from us, the monster of the id.
Absolutely. I sort of, if you look at it, like since 9/11 and that, there's been an awakening in people and the consciousness, and it's sort of, it's scary almost. People are starting to realize what's important to them, you know?
Yes. I quite agree with that.
I think people are really looking back and saying, wow, you know, maybe this is our chance to maybe stop things from, like, the genie's out of the bottle, but maybe we can stop these things from happening.
Maybe. I'm sure off on the side of, I'm praying that we do.
Well, so do I, sir.
But there's another side of me, too. And that's a pretty primal side, and I don't deny it.
And it's coming out in everyone.
Yeah, I know. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if we could catch these people in one general place, these people who killed our people, I say drop, attack New Ghanem, and turn them into total ash. I mean, that's the primal side of me, and I'm not going to hide it. That's how I feel.
And a lot of people feel that way, sir. There's many people feel that way.
I get a lot of flack over that.
Yeah, and I'm sure you do. I went around, and you talked to people, sir.
Well.
There you go. So, and it's happening everywhere.
I agree. So I don't know how we're going to come out of this.
I don't know. I was born in 62, so when I was born, there was something sort of like happening like this. So
I don't know.
It's wild.
There sure was. It is wild. Thank you very much. Yeah. I agree. I know it seems duplicitous probably isn't the right word. Not really workable. I mean, on the one side, nobody wants war. Nobody really, and nobody with any sanity wants war. Oh, by the way, don't forget the insanity test on my website. I'd love to get some comments on that, either in Fast Blast or here on the phone lines. It's really fun. You'll really enjoy this. It'll take you about 1 minute. It's under What's New, and it reads the insanity test. Be sure you have your computer speakers on. Take the insanity test. It comes from apparently Cornell University. If you look at the URL, it's a Cornell URL, and it's really worth the look-see and the listen. The insanity test on my website now. Want to know how you make out. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Mark.
Hi.
Love your show.
Thank you.
I love the show on Gabriel.
Oh, Gabriel, yes.
I hope he calls back. I hope he's able to.
Gosh, Gabriel, yes.
And your show last night?
With Bob Lazar.
Yes. The truth is out there. I get the truth off of your shows, and I call the television news Inquirer News.
Well, sometimes, not always on my program. I mean, let's face it, I have a wide array of guests.
Stephen Quayle, too.
There you are. With a wide amount of believability. Some of them not. Some of them are. Some exceptionally believable people. Bob Lazar is into the exceptionally believable category for me. I mean, the man, I've known him for years. His story has never been embellished. It's never changed. Last night we got some new details, but, you know, the guy is rock solid.
Right.
So what do you say?
It comes across, and, you know, whether some of the things are true or not, there's a variety. I have a lot to choose from. There's always something I like about it. And I love George Norrie, too.
Good for you. Yeah,
so you have a good vacation when he's on, and enjoy it.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're looking forward to that, an actual vacation where we're not incapacitated in some manner or another, real vacation. And this time, it's not going to be maybe we can prevent. Now, of course, every time I have gone on vacation in years past, something awful has happened. But you see, I've always flown. You know, my wife and I love Paris, France, and you know it's very romantic. And so I fly her to Paris when I get the chance. And under ordinary circumstances, by God, I'd fly her to Paris, and we'd sit on the Seine, and you know, eat bread and drink wine, and catch up on each other because we live very busy lives, but not this time. You know, something's changed since 9/11, and I don't know. It feels better staying domestic. So we're going to stay pretty close to home. I mean, we're going to take a few trips in the giant mobile out there. But we're going to stay close to home, and it's just a feeling I have, and I think it's shared by a lot of Americans right now. You know, people are flying, I note, for business reasons. Certainly they're still flying for business reasons, and they're flying when they have to for family reasons, you know, important reasons. I understand that. When you go coast to coast, you got to fly. Take 5-6 days to drive it, and you'll be tired when you get there otherwise. So, you got to fly. But what people are not doing is a whole lot of optional flying, you know, enjoyment flying. You know, let's just take off and go down to Mexico for the weekend or something like that. That sort of thing isn't happening as much since 9/11. And I feel it too. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell.
Howdy.
How are you?
Fine.
This is John from North Hollywood.
Yes, sir.
And I'm listening to you on AM 640.
KFI, the monster of the West.
Yeah, they sure are, except when you get out in canyon country.
listen, I'm telling you, though, that 640 signal, that clear signal, is the damnedest thing. They are stronger here, where I am, than any other station on the dial, on the AM dial. They are the strongest station on the AM dial, and I'm out here not far from Death Valley.
Wow.
That's big signal.
Yeah, it sure is. And another thing I'd just like to say to you, too, I work out here in Hollywood, and you've certainly kept me company on a lot of all-nighters I've been on, so I just want to say thanks.
What do you do in Hollywood?
I work on the lighting crews out here, and, you know, sometimes when we do all-nighters, it's, you know, I have you on in the truck or have you on doing other things, and I know a lot of guys listen to you out here, so.
Yeah, I know. Movies, and I've been on a bunch of sets, there's always a whole lot of trucks. Boy, makeup trucks and sound trucks and lighting trucks, and oh, my God, where do they get all those trucks?
Well, there's a lot of places to get them out here, believe me.
Yeah, I'm sure. That would be a place.
So anyway, the thing I wanted to discuss with you is, you know, I was obviously, you know, horrified by the events of 9/11 like everybody else.
Back, sure.
Funny enough, I was actually going to Paramount that morning.
Really?
When that whole thing went down. It was a horrible time. But, you know, I've listened to you probably going on for about 5 or 6 years now, and I've heard every guest, you know, that you've had from every category, from Major Red Dames to Whitley Strieber.
Then you know they go across the whole spectrum.
Yeah, I've listened to the whole cross section, and I have to say that one thing, and I don't know whether it's a self-comforting theory, but I've really come to at least one conclusion after listening to you after all these years, and that is that there is definitely powers out there that, you know, obviously we can't explain, but I believe that there's albeit creatures or another race or something along those lines.
Or as the one caller a little while ago said, even if it's us collectively.
Yeah, somebody that has a technology or a power that definitely exceeds ours.
I betcha.
I definitely have come to that conclusion. The one thing, though, that I've been rolling around in my brain for a long time, and I don't know whether it's a comfort to the families or whether it's a comfort to myself or what have you, but and when I say this, I'm not talking about the FBI or the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
I've always, in almost the days after it happened, I sat there and I said, this is like an event like the Titanic. This is an event like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah,
exactly. It's just another Pearl Harbor, like Gettysburg. It's an event. It's a turning point in humanity.
That's right.
And I sat there and I said, you know, somebody knew. And I'm not talking about the FBI or CIA or any domestic or any kind of, in my opinion, earthly agency. Some race knew, some power knew that this was going to happen. Somebody knew that this was going to happen, and it was going to, and they knew it. I mean, it's just too big for the trade centers and the Pentagon.
Yeah, that's a fair assumption. Somebody knew.
Somebody knew, and somebody did nothing. And my feeling is that...
Now, here's one conclusion to come to after what you just said. If somebody knew, if some greater power than us knew and did nothing, then the people who think we'll be rescued from a nuclear war by some little green guys who are going to come swooping down and scarf up the nukes better think again.
I agree with that. But I'll tell you this, and the reason this has been going around in my head, excuse me, my feeling is that had somebody known and somebody done something, because it would have been somebody that would have known that would have had a power to do it, you know, based on everything I've heard over the years, any number of ways could have been, you know, without even making it look like it was some kind of divine power to come in long before it even happened. You know,
yeah.
Some these hijackers could have disappeared, or somebody could have, the memo could have gotten to the right person at the right time, you know, just a little nudge in that direction. A lot of things had to come together for that to happen. To me, somebody didn't do it because I feel that had somebody interfered, it might have, in other words, that timeline where no one interferes, who knows? By that point, you know, Israel might have nuked somebody by now, or something. So yeah, something, you know, it brought the world together at a time that maybe something worse might happen down the line.
Might have happened if that hadn't. Yeah, it depends. Thank you. It depends on how you think about time. I understand exactly what you're saying. If something had interfered, then something perhaps more dire would have occurred. A nuclear exchange, a Middle East war with nukes, or India and Pakistan, which we face anyway. Yeah, I'm tracking with you there. But, you know, one thing did happen that didn't happen. Flight 93. The heroes of Flight 93. Now, that airplane, I think Washington now admits, was in all likelihood headed to White House. And imagine the additional shock and horror to the American psyche if a plane of that size had crashed into the White House, virtually destroying it, burning it up, destroying the White House. Imagine the additional shock to the American psyche, even though the president, as we know, was in Florida, not there at the time. There would have been many killed at the White House, but instead, people on that airplane intervened, and they took it down, knowing they were taking it down to their own deaths. So there was something that didn't happen. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is Steve from Alaska, Anchorage.
Hello, Steve.
This Art?
Yes, I'm the only one here. It's the only possibility of me.
Okay, I was just listening to you talking about the White House that didn't get hit by Flight 95.
93, yes.
93, I'm sorry. Well, that $20 bill that shows the Twin Towers burning when you fold it right?
Yes.
If you turn it around, it shows the White House burning, so they missed one of their targets.
Well, actually, people are claiming it shows the Pentagon, sir.
Yeah, I kind of look at it. To me, it looks more like the White House.
Uh-huh.
So I thought I'd just call and tell you about that, because I never heard you talk about that side of the bill.
No, I haven't, because it's. I appreciate it. Thank you. It's less distinctive. You see, you just pointed out yourself in a way by saying that, in fact, if you look on my website, again, under What's New, you'll have to go down a way and ways, and you'll see Art's folded $20 bill. Well, that's not Art's folded $20 bill. Ramona folded that. I'm lousy at that kind of stuff. This thing circulated around the Internet like crazy. I mean, it went around the Internet like wildfire. So if you've got email, you got a version of it. And Ramona read the instructions and folded the $20 bill, and I scanned it. I did a high-resolution scan. So many of them I've seen are very low-resolution. She did a wonderful job of folding it, and then I did a high-res scan. And I'll be damned if that is not what it looks like. It looks like the Twin Towers, which have been hit and are burning. And it looks exactly like that. So make of that what you will. It could be, of course, a coincidence. But that's a pretty big coincidence. We've got that on the website. Ramona's folded version of the $20 bill. Go take a look if you haven't seen it yet. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Art?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Spencer from Houston, Texas.
Yes, sir.
Hi, I was just wondering what could have possibly happened with Kreskin's stunt yesterday?
Sir, I'm not discussing that any further on the air.
Okay.
I appreciate the call, but I said all I had to say about that. I'm sure you heard it. Didn't you?
No, actually.
You didn't, all right, well, that hour will replay, and you'll get a second opportunity to hear it. I appreciate the call, but I am not discussing that any further. I've said all I'm going to say about it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
This is Bill in Laguna Hills, California.
Yes, sir.
Art, I've heard about your back problems.
Yes.
And for a number of years, I had chronic back pain, and maybe I have an answer for you.
Well, what's your answer?
Have you ever heard of Dr. John Sarno?
No.
Well, Dr. Sarno is based in New York. He's a physician, not some kind of a weirdo. And, 10 years or so ago, I heard about the doctor on Howard Stern's show.
Howard, huh? Yeah, I know Howard has back troubles.
Pardon?
Howard has back troubles.
Yes, he had back troubles.
Probably spent too much time on his back, actually.
Yeah, until he consulted with Dr. Sarno.
I heard that, yeah, that this doctor did help Howard. I heard that.
Well, I wasn't able to get to New York, Art, but I got his book, Healing Back Pain. I read about half of it, and I swear to God, in 3 days, my back pain was a thing of the past.
Well, I'll give it a try. I have a copy of that book, sir, now that you mention it. I have a copy. Thank you very much. Someone sent it to me. I haven't gotten to it yet. But I've been to some of the best sports doctors in Los Angeles in the world, you know, take care of the NFL players and that sort of thing. So I kind of know what the story is with my back, but I'll read anyway. Another one. That's two tonight that I think I ought to just take and start from. I just love the way it begins.
Life, so it begins.
Kingdom of Nye, from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. And the wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. To reach Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
Our love is alive, and so it begins. And, you know, I think I like this because I think, basically, I feel that love is probably, truthfully, the most important, powerful, human emotion that exists. And there's a lot more to it than we understand right now. We'll be right back if you'll be so kind as to stay planted. Let us step back into the night. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
I'm Sandy in Portland.
All right, Sandy.
I've been trying to put together some things. A long time before you had Sean Morton on talking about sunflares. And he said that the stock market goes down when the sun flares.
That's what he said.
Only in cycles. It's supposed to be 11-year cycles and 22-year cycles.
Well, this particular cycle, you know, the one we're in right now?
Uh-huh.
Cycle 23, is a little bit unusual. We've had a double peak in this cycle. Normally, a cycle will peak, and then there'll be a slow decline over several years. And that's the way it works. It's kind of like climbing a mountain, going down the other side. This time, though, it looks like there have been two mountains there, and we've had an unusual number of... we went through a storm of flares. That would be a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. And then you had the lady on that talked about the invisibility phenomena.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And she stated that the sun was changing from a hydrogen sun to a helium sun.
And I've also had about 10 million emails saying people feel the sun is hotter, that the rays of the sun burn their skin or affect their skin more quickly, that when they do look at the sun, which nobody should do, it appears now white more than it does the old yellowish sun that we sort of remember with a yet more yellow color than not.
So is helium hotter than hydrogen?
I don't know. I guess I really don't know. That would be a question for a physicist.
Okay. So, but Sean mentioned that... when the sun flares, it produces an effect on our limbic systems
mm-hmm.
that causes fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to understand if there is fear being brought out in the war, Pakistan, India.
I see. Well, there's enough
Israel
fear.
Israel and Palestine.
Enough fear to go around now, isn't there?
Well, your statement on love was great.
Well, it's true.
If we could overcome the fears.
But I agree with you, thank you. But it's the other, you see, it's the 180. I feel that love is probably ultimately the most potent force in the universe. I really believe that. But there's also, and I said this earlier myself, that there's a primal part of me that wants to kill every last one of those bastards that knocked those buildings down and killed our citizens. It was an act of war. Clear act of war. As clear as you can get, in my opinion. And I think they should be dead. And if they think of reincarnation, then it's time for them to reincarnate. Or whatever. But they should be dead. So the primal part of me fights with the knowing part of me about love. And I do not have that resolved, which may mean that I am not as evolved as some would hope that I would be. But you see, I think that's true of very many of us. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
I was wondering about what your opinion is on reincarnation as opposed to you die once and go off to heaven, or you die and you go nowhere. And I was wondering, I read your book, The Art of Talk, and that was an excellent book. And
thank you.
I really enjoyed how you and Ramona got together and so forth. And you talk about being soulmates. And
yes.
I was curious as to what is the tone of that experience of being soulmates.
Really?
And does it connect in with the reincarnational aspect?
Okay. You really want to know?
I really want to know.
All right. Here it comes. Some people will never know this, and so I'll see if I can describe it. The second I saw Ramona, all those, you know, a decade ago better than, the very second I knew and she knew, I mean, it didn't need words. It was just an absolute instant, without question, knowing. There you are. My God, there you are. Where have you been? You know, you say to yourself, I suppose. But it's that powerful, and it has never changed. Now, I'm not sure how it relates to reincarnation, and I'm not even certain that I believe in reincarnation. I think I lean toward reincarnation as an answer, as an answer to what may occur to us. I don't buy into the, we never graduate to, I'm not in that class, you know, that we just reincarnate endlessly forever. That seems without reason to me. Not that I am to understand everything, but it doesn't seem reasonable to me. If incarnations are to mean something, then there must be progress, not just endless karma and endless incarnation. So I don't think I believe that. But I do tend toward believing in reincarnation. And maybe sometimes you find your soulmate, and sometimes you don't find your soulmate. All I can tell you is this. When you do find your soulmate, you'll have no questions about it. You won't have to ask. You won't have to wonder. It will hit you like a ton of bricks, and it will never leave. So that it's that kind of knowing, and that's the only way I can think to explain it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Tim in St. Louis on KTRS.
Yes, sir.
I had a few things. Could you imagine, like, I think the White House probably would have been history if it wasn't for people on board having cell phones.
I think that's pretty good. A pretty good estimation, sir.
I certainly think the other people would like a chance to be heroes and know what their fate was going to be.
No question about it.
But like the hijackers, I think I'd lock them in a dark box with 10,000 fleas.
Yeah, I know.
Let them drink their blood.
Yeah, I know. This is it's a primal side of us, you know. And it's not wrong. I mean, we're entitled to self-defense, and that's all there is to it.
Got time for a ghost story?
A real ghost story?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
This friend of mine got home at night, and his bedroom was out in the garage. So he's laying in his bed, which is against the wall. And all of a sudden, he starts feeling this tapping on his shoulder.
Huh.
And nothing could be behind him, so he kind of ignored it and kept feeling this tapping and turned around. And saw the ghost of his next-door neighbor's wife. But it was the next morning he woke up and his mother told him that this woman had died that morning.
Aye, aye, aye. I wonder why she was tapping on his shoulder.
Well, he was kind of wasted, so it's possible that he was tuned into that kind of thing, possibly.
Could be. I mean, you think she'd go for the hubby instead of the guy next door, but, well...
Yeah, it was kind of hard to figure out. Maybe he beat her or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, how are we to know, right? Very interesting. Thank you. Well, tapping on the shoulder is a strong hint. No. Hey. Yo. I'm here. But the next door neighbor's wife, huh? And he was wasted his word at the time. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
How you doing, Art?
Okay, sir.
This is Matt calling from Upland, California.
Hey,
this
Matt.
On KFI.
The wild thing at 775-727-1295. I'm going to eliminate that. I don't want to talk about that, sir.
Oh, okay, sorry.
So
let's
move on to something else.
Sorry. Love is a powerful thing. I just want to tell you a quick story before I ask you a question. I lost my grandpa a couple of weeks ago, and... I was so sad because I never got to see him before he had passed, and I just kept writhing, or, you know, finally I had a dream that seemed so real, as if he came to me in my dream and, like, forgave me for it, and we embraced in the dream, and I cried and stuff, and it seemed so real. It was just amazing, you know? That was, like, just backing up the love.
Well, you can figure two possibilities, right? One possibility is that your brain, mm-hmm. wanting this settled, mm-hmm. caused you to have that dream.
True.
Or... it really happened, and science now is finally to the point where they're beginning to investigate whether the latter is one possibility, and I think it is.
Yeah, definitely. And the question I just wanted to ask you was if you could give me a breakdown of the concept of the non-locality thing.
Ah, non-locality.
Yeah, because I've...
Non-locality is pretty complicated, but here it is in a nutshell.
Okay.
It says that everything... is connected to everything else.
Okay.
Everything, literally. Yeah. Every thought, every consciousness, you're the desk in front of you, the house around you, mm-hmm. the earth beneath your feet, all of it is in some way connected. And that's a real loose sort of description of non-locality, but everything is connected.
Uh-huh. Sounds almost like how they describe the Matrix in the movie.
Yeah, kind of. Well, even deeper and bigger than the Matrix.
Yeah. It's actually real. It's not a thing implanted.
Yes, it's actually real.
Nice.
And therefore, people who do remote viewing and some psychics may be tapping into this great non-locality, and maybe that's where they're getting some of their information.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, and take care. On the first-time caller line, you are on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
This is Cameron calling from Virginia.
Okay, Cameron, radio off, right?
Just turn it off.
Okay, good.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I had actually heard earlier something about Flight 93, I believe it is, in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
And I guess my comment is that during that point, just shortly after 9/11, I remember hearing something about wreckage that had supposedly blown away from the site of the crash itself. That was something like 10 miles or something outrageous like that. And it just makes me kind of wonder if possibly they weren't shot down. And I know that's not a new thought.
No, it's not. There are a number of people who, actually, there had been an order given, it's my understanding. There had been presidential authority and an order given that would have perhaps shot down Flight 93, or they were going to try, but they wouldn't have made it. And they, of course, they didn't make it to the other ones, and they probably would not have made it to shoot down Flight 93. But there are some people who believe they did, in fact, shoot it down. I'm not one of them. The record is pretty damn clear in terms of the cell phone conversations between the passengers and their family. And, you know, the cell phone conversations indicating that the passengers were going to try and overwhelm the hijackers and stop it and crash it if they had to. That's pretty clear.
I'm just, I kind of think that maybe folks may get tied up too much into the patriotic side of what's going on and looking to these folks as heroes when maybe
it was shot down, you think?
Well, just to be safe, maybe so.
Okay, well, maybe is right, but I don't think so. I think the most obvious explanation is the one that's probably true. And, you know, I've seen the families, I've heard recounts of the cell phone conversations and all the rest of it. And those passengers obviously intended on taking that plane down as a last resort. They knew damn well where they were headed and what their fate was going to be. And they made a group decision on that airplane. I mean, we all know that from the conversations that occurred. So, to me, the most obvious is probably the truth. And I will consider those people to be heroes until I would learn otherwise. And I don't think I will. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art.
Hey, yes.
I'm in Honolulu, listening on KHVH.
Yes, sir.
Back on the good old masked mind experiments, you were voicing your concern about the problem of unintended consequences.
You bet.
Possibly getting spun off.
Right.
And, you know, I hear your concern.
Even the people who are doing the research in this area, sir, the deep research, agreed with me that we don't know enough yet.
What if with the India-Pakistan thing, that mess, if we did a thing where we were collectively pouring unconditional love into Kashmir, because that's kind of the flashpoint there. I was just thinking, I wonder if this is the way to...
It's also where Al-Qaeda is hiding right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I'm wondering if that's a way to get around that problem.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about... look, India and Pakistan are the combatants. And it would be hard enough for me to imagine unconditional love their direction, although I could imagine that. But at Kashmir right now, I more or less have unconditional hate and yeah. and hope that the prison occupants that perpetrated this awful thing on the U.S. die.
Check this out.
Yes. I'm sure you're right, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I really, you know, I really like the way your honesty about wanting that feeling of, you know, righteous revenge or whatever. I mean, I think we all feel it to some degree. And sort of wrestling with the other side of it and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking that that those guys, don't you think those folks over there could be characterized as sort of extremely hateful people?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So someone like that is really addicted to hate. They feed on it.
Yeah.
And if you shoot violence at them, in a sense, you're feeding them what they want.
Yeah.
Whereas if you give them love, it's revolutionary. It's the total opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I you know.
Sir, I wouldn't stop you for one second from pouring all the unconditional love you want that way, but I'm sorry. I can't get on that horse.
Right.
But you're probably right. I appreciate your call.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you. You know, love is powerful, and he may be exactly right, and I'm just not evolved enough to participate in such an event, nor am I inclined to experiment in that area. Now, I will say this. If something began, if a conventional war began that was obviously about to become nuclear, would I consider doing something? Yes, I would, but I would think, I would come at it so hesitantly. But just prior to an event, if I had warning, if a conventional war had begun, I would be pushed to consider it. But I'm frankly afraid of it. I'm afraid of unintended consequences. And I think any reasonable person who really understands this power, and this is not something to fool around with, should have the same kind of cautions. We don't have a lot of time here, but east of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Art.
Hey.
I just had a question. When you have other guest hosts on, they always mention their crew at the end of the show. I know it's just you and your home, but I was wondering who else is involved with broadcasting your show every night.
Well, there is a crew up in Medford, Oregon, in New Jersey, in California. There are many, many people involved in getting this broadcast from point A to point B.
And it always just kind of seems like you and your back room having fun.
Well, you know, actually, it kind of is. I'll tell you what. If you, it's Arne Nickel. If you can afford to hang on through the news,
okay.
I'll hold on to you. All right.
All right. Cool.
And it is actually me in the back room. You know, you got that one right on the money. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast.
She's got something that moves my soul, and she knows. I'd love to love her, but she lets me down every time. Can't make up mine. She's no one's lover tonight. With me, she'll be so inviting. I want her all for myself. Oh, I can't visualize.
There's something inside that we need so much. Sight of the touch or the scent of the sand or the strength of an oak leaves deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hold and to use them to help. Take this place.
take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at 1-775-727-1222. The wildcard line is open at 1-775-727-1295. And to call Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell from the Kingdom of Nye.
It certainly is where the evil winds are forecast to blow later in the Kingdom of Nye. They're telling us we're going to have 60-mile-an-hour gusts. Should be an interesting Saturday. We'll get back to our caller in a moment. It was a long wait, but you're back on the air again, sir, and I think you left off by saying I sound like one guy in one back room having fun, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is. I have taken, years ago, I took a bedroom in my house, and I converted it to a full studio. Now, when you hear other hosts, you know, ones who fill in for me, and in fact, most all talk show hosts across America, they're sitting there at a desk with a microphone and a headphone on, and they're receiving orders and break cues and listening to someone else run their bumper music and play their commercials, and they just sit there in front of that mic and talk when it comes time for them to talk. That's even the case with, you know, like George Norrie, for example, or any of the other people who fill in here. And it's the modern way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not real modern, and so I have everything here in this room you talked about. I've got the control board. I've got I answer all the telephones myself. I don't let anybody else do that. I have cart machines, so I do all my own commercials right from here. They're not done from somewhere else. They're done here. I pick and play all of my own bumper music. So in other words, I'm doing it all right here, and so the job that they have in Medford, if, you know, for the person who is there, is reduced to watching levels and perhaps adding a subaudible tone or something like that for affiliate stations, and so that's what I do. Now, there was a day when I didn't let anybody else do anything. For example, I pre-interviewed all of my own guests.
Oh.
So when I would wake up in the morning, I would begin interviewing guests all day long until it was time to go to sleep and wake up and do the program.
Didn't sleep much, did you?
No, I didn't. And so now I've turned some of that pre-interview of guests over to I do have a staff in Medford, Oregon, wonderful people. Alan Corbeth runs it, and I've turned some of those pre-interview duties over to them. And then, of course, I still have final approval. Yes, no, I want that guest or I don't want that guest. But they're doing some of the, you know, hard trench work now during the day. I still do all of this weird stuff myself.
You do the fun stuff yourself.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
It sure does. I have one more question.
All right.
It's about dreams. People have been saying, you know, all this chaos that we're going through, I know that people are dreaming more. I found that I'm actually dreaming a lot less. I used to have dreams that would come true, mainly just about events, you know, going out to eat with friends or whatnot. I've noticed lately that I just don't dream at all. I was wondering if...
Well, there are several possibilities here.
Mm-hmm.
One, you say you used to dream dreams that come true, right?
All the time, yeah.
Yeah, cool. I don't want to sound on the negative side of things here, but I, too, dream of things that many times come true, and a lot of people do. I think it's pretty common.
Yeah.
And if you're not dreaming about the future anymore...
It kind of makes me think they're... may not be that good.
Or even there at all.
Yeah.
you know,
that's not true.
That's the half-empty glass of water. The half-full glass of water is you're not burdened with dreams, and so you can just live your life.
I hope that's true.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
Take care.
You have a good evening.
You too, sir. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Greetings. This is Gary from Moreno Valley, California.
Hey there.
How are you doing tonight, Eric?
Just fine.
There's been a lot of concern out there about global warming, and certainly with this Enron situation that occurred and rocked the country and
All of our great pension IRAs are suffering because of it. Now Americans are going to suffer because there's just far too much fossil fuels out there being burned.
I lost thousands of dollars on Enron.
Ouch.
It's a really sore subject with me, sir.
Hey, I can understand that.
Anyway.
I was approached by a European consortium group, and I took the liberty to send you an email here earlier tonight. You'll notice it where it says Global Warming Solution.
Okay.
What these guys have proposed and dropped in my lap is something that's, I think it's going to be very historic once it's completed. It's a, for lack of a better word, a vacuum vortex which will create electricity. And the way they're going to build this, and by the way, it's a 650-megawatt facility.
Do you understand it well enough to explain it better than that? A vacuum vortex...
Sure.
I understand what a vacuum is.
Well, the way this is going to work, it's going to first off be 150 stories tall, 1,500 feet.
Okay.
And it's going to be roughly 90 feet at the base and about 60 feet at the top.
Okay.
And they're going to stack 51 vertical turbines inside this cylinder shaft.
Yes, and?
And what they're going to do is take out all the ambient air in the top layer of the machine.
Create a vacuum.
The tower,
create a vacuum.
And create a vacuum vortex that one air chamber releases into the next air chamber 51 times till it hits, because air pressure at that altitude is thinner than here on planet Earth. And it's ran through a series of static testing over on the computer net overseas.
So you're claiming the energy is the pressure difference?
A pressure differential, exactly.
That's interesting.
Well, we've created a 4-foot scale model by accident. And
how, just before you get going too much, even in 1,500 feet, there can't be enough pressure, can there, really, to account for that much energy?
Well, at 1,500 feet, the air, the barometric pressure is different than here on planet Earth.
I beg your pardon? Oh, you mean at 1,500 feet? Sir, I live in the high desert. We're at 2,600 plus here. So.
But the altitude differential.
It makes a little barometric pressure difference. I agree with you, but it's pretty small.
Is just the ambient that they need.
Well,
when they take out all the air pressure on the top, it will then, so to speak, open up the hatch.
Right.
The air pressure will then suck in, and doesn't matter if it's raining, snowing, blowing, or what, the air pressure then will be sucked into the shaft on the top.
Right.
And turned into to the fan blades, which is then released to the second chamber.
I understand.
Because of that gap, there's going to be a constant pull.
No, I understand. Sure there is, but and I appreciate your call. And you follow up with me with email, and I'm glad to look at it. And there may be an aspect of it I don't understand, but it just seems to me that the barometric pressure difference for 1,500 feet, you know, unless there's some process that is ongoing from that, which you seem to be suggesting that accounts for more than just a pressure difference, I don't see. It's not exactly Niagara Falls, you know, so. I'd have to see it, and I'd have to know more. Send me email. Well, my email address is artbell, A-R-T-B-E-L-L, at mindspring.com. That's artbell at mindspring.com, or artbell at AOL.com will work as well. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes.
Hi. Yeah, I'm Mark here. I'm an old-road truck driver.
Yeah, I can tell, and you're on a cell phone, aren't you?
Yes, sir, I am.
A cell phone that has taken a step backwards for humanity.
I got a constant problem in trying to get you in all the time. And one night I was late, in the middle of May here, I was surfing through the channels, and I thought I found you, and I found another station. They were talking about Planet X.
Planet X, yes.
Yeah, it was a Newswatch magazine article. And I just wondered if you ever heard about it or read it or...
Well, I certainly have heard about the ABC News article on some object, sun, they speculate, or planet, or something that's out there that may from time to time come by Earth and cause all hell to break loose. Listen, next week, next week, I've got Nancy Leader from Zeta Talk on the subject of Planet X. This is a subject that will not go away. And perhaps it should not go away. Maybe there's really something to it. I don't know yet. I know she is another impassioned spokesperson on the subject of Planet X. So look for that to happen next week. And let me tell you what else is going to happen next week while I'm at it, huh? Some pretty interesting stuff. Monday is going to be Gordon Michael Scallion. Now, he was rescheduled from an earlier time. Gordon is an incredibly interesting intuitive who has had very, very specific visions. His story is riveting. His predictions are riveting. And you don't hear him on the air very frequently. Gordon Michael Scallion's coming up. And then the next day is Nancy on Planet X, and so that would be the show for that last caller. And then Carl Edward Ball is going to be on the program, and this is going to be extremely interesting. He's created a barrack biosphere. And so we're going to talk about the creation of life, what he's found with an attempt to, in effect, create creation. So it's going to be kind of an interesting week next week, and one you're not going to want to miss. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning.
This is Kat from near San Francisco.
Yes.
Two things. First of all, should our dear primal friends in Pakistan decide to do something incredibly stupid, there's a rather prophetic little song they should be serenaded with, and that is the Kingston Trio's Merry Minuet.
Wow.
I don't know if you're familiar with it.
I am.
Oh, okay.
You know
what I'm talking about.
I do, you know, but it's hard to decide. You know, I've thought about who the aggressor is going to be maybe in this thing, and I'm more likely to put my money on India. And let me tell you why. India continues to accuse that Pakistan is allowing all of these militant, radical, bad guy people like Al-Qaeda to infiltrate into Kashmir.
Which is probably true.
Which is perhaps true, yes. Now, right now, our government, which probably winks and nods and does a lot of things to let things happen, right?
Oh, true.
Our government probably has some interest in seeing these miserable bastards killed.
Well, not only that.
No, and then there's more alignments to consider.
Well, over and above the alignments, then there's also the problem of the thousand years that particular belief has been trying to destroy India. So maybe they've got justification. But the second point...
I don't know. All I'm saying is maybe they're getting a wink and a nod. I they could be. I don't know. We say we're trying to prevent it, but our interests are with India, and Israel's interests are with India. And Israel's support is of India, and for the same exact reasons. And so, well, there's a lot of dynamics at work here. Chinese support Pakistan, and, you know, I mean, doesn't take a lot of deep thought here to see what could happen.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Now for our second point. Mr. Dames mentioned an Al-Qaeda group.
Ed Dames, yes. Cell.
Yes. The first week of last month, somebody in a very organized manner broke into a bunker on the California-Oregon border and absconded with
dynamite.
700 pounds
of dynamite.
I know. The pieces fit together too well.
Yeah, I've been sitting on that story, sir. I'm aware of it. Somebody did steal 700 pounds of dynamite.
That's a concern considering all the other possible involvements.
Yeah, this gentleman is exactly right. That, and there have been chemicals stolen in trucks, you know, that kind of thing. And maybe, you know, that kind of thing probably also goes on all the time, but we're sort of hypersensitive to it all now. any sort of anything in that area gets a lot of attention since 9/11, as I guess it should. You know, we're in a different world right now. Keys to the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. West of the Rockies, call toll-free, 1-800-618-8255. Andre, Andre, I had to just bleep that out. We're not allowed your last name on the air, so...
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's quite all right. We'll just call you Andre. Where are you?
I'm on 95 in Florida. I'm a truck driver, and I've been trying and trying and trying to get a text with you, and I finally have, and it's such an honor to speak with you.
Thank you very much. Well, here you are.
Well, I want to speak about reincarnation.
Okay.
When I was a child, I just started speaking. My mother has informed me about this, and I remember it clearly. But she told me when I finally started talking to her about this. I spent about 4 years old, and my mother's friends were over at the house, and they were bouncing me on their knee, and I have a scar on my left wrist. And one of my mother's friends asked me where I got the scar from. And I said, well, I was shot when I was in the Civil War.
Oh, really?
And
how old were you again?
4 years old.
4 years old.
And I commenced to telling her all about the horse that I rode, the regiment that I was in, and described as cobblestone roads where I fell off my horse when I was shot.
Do you actually remember telling all of this yourself, first person, or are you relaying now to me what they told you you said, or
no,
both?
I remember it clearly even today. And even so, even more so, I remember before that my love for the ocean. I remember it vaguely, but as of today, I'm a big nautical buff, and I know how to sail without even having to have a sailing lesson.
That's pretty good.
And one other thing that's really mind-boggling is where all their jaws hit the ground was I described my mother and the boat that she came over from Germany on, the gentleman that she was playing ping pong with on the deck of the boat. I described how many balls went over the railing, what she was wearing and the gentleman was wearing at the same time.
That's incredible.
And I don't know how to explain it. I mean, it gives me cold chills because I can see it vividly today, the name of the boat, and everything before she was even my mother,
and of course,
before she even met my father.
And, of course, all of this, yeah, I'm sure they just sat there. They knew all this, so they just sat there and their jaws hit their chests, huh?
Yeah, and my mother said, "Well, how did you know this?" I said, "Well, I was there. I saw you."
How did they react to all this?
Well, two of my mother's friends never came around again, and my mother, she just—I mean, it's mind-boggling because she has pictures of the boat.
Moms have to let you stay, so
yeah,
good for you, I guess.
But I don't know if it's something. I'd like to find out if any other people have seen their mother before they were even conceived.
You got it. That all of that is part of what's said about reincarnation. It's absolutely fascinating, and that's a fascinating story, isn't it? What would you do as a parent if you heard all that? What would you do?
Come on, baby, don't feel the reaper. Baby, take my hand. Come on, feel the reaper. You'll be able to fly. Come on,
take a ride? Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have the 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is that. Good morning, everybody. Friday night, Saturday morning. We're getting ready for the big winds to blow around here. And kind of hoping they don't, but it could be an eventful day. In a moment, we'll be back and continue pushing into the night with who knows what. As promised, now back into the darkness. For first-time caller line, your turn, I think. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Art. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay, sir.
Yes, I'd like to call and comment about the interview you had with Robert Lazar last night. It was an excellent interview.
Thank you. I thought it was really a good interview, and I thought that we got a lot of details that we never, ever got from Bob before.
Well, the interesting thing about it was is I had the great opportunity to live in Rachel, Nevada for a time next door to Area 51.
Huh.
And, often went out to the line. I'm an over-the-road truck driver, and I was in and out quite often. But I had one interesting sighting March 10th of 2000 that just really knocked my socks off. I was out with a friend of mine, and we were sitting in Tickaboo Valley. Oh, about 10 o'clock in the evening,
mm-hmm.
and we were out looking towards the base, and I just happened to glance over my right shoulder overlooking Coyote Summit, and all of a sudden there was this massive object hovering over Coyote Summit from where our vantage point was.
Right.
And it just appeared and then disappeared, and about a minute later, it appeared on closer towards the base, and the amazing thing about it was completely silent. And he's a private pilot, and we estimated the wingspan of this thing to be at least 750 feet
uh-huh.
in length, and
uh-huh.
completely quiet, no noise.
Yep.
And out in Tickaboo Valley, if there's a plane flying, you can hear it for miles.
I know.
And
I know. You're one of thousands, sir. I mean, look, since the mid-80s, you know, when all of this came down, thousands of people have gone up there, and particularly in the earlier years, the sightings are legion. There's no question about the fact that kind of stuff is and has been flying up there, period. It's the truth. It is flying up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've gotten to see several things flying around up there that I have no explanation for. And living up there was absolutely terrific because you got to go up, you know, go out there at night, and it was kind of like fishing. Just wait to see what pops up. I often came in contact with the security personnel out there from time to time. And it's no longer Wackenhut who has the contract. I'm not sure who has it.
Oh, I think it was during the Lazar encounter.
Yeah, Wackenhut did have it, but I believe now, if my information is correct, it might be Sandia Security that has it now.
Well, whoever it is, someone went to Area 51. That, too, is on my website. A fellow took a trip up there, I mean, like a couple of weeks ago, I think, and you know, he was met with a helicopter, and he got pictures, and he got out with the pictures, but this helicopter came right up in front of him like a mad dog.
You
can't go up in there.
Yeah, we used to play games with security from time to time.
That's not a good idea.
Well, we always stayed on our side of the line, but a friend of mine who does run a website on Area 51 has excellent pictures of the Blackhawk.
I'm sure, yeah. I'm sure. Listen, everybody. I do not, look, if you go, I'm not going to say I don't recommend it. I mean, what the hell, we have the extraterrestrial highway, right? So you're going to go up near that area. But really, honest to God, folks, I'm serious about this. Do not try and penetrate Area 51. Number one, you're not going to make it. You're flat not going to make it. They have security there. They have ground sensors. They've got helicopters. They've got really upsetting guys in vehicles that will chase you. All kinds. The sheriff will get you. You will spend time in jail. Many things are possible, but do not try to go into Area 51. Respect where you have to stop. You still may well see something, because it is going on up there. It is going on, was going on. There's no question about it. What they are, there's lots of questions. But that it is occurring, no question whatsoever. So if you're going to head up there, listen to what I say. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Bell.
Good morning.
This is Brandy in East Tennessee.
Hey, Brandy.
That insanity test.
Yes.
What was it you had to go? 60 seconds?
I believe it was 60 seconds called for, yes.
I got about six.
6 seconds?
Yes.
You gotta wonder where whoever it is that did this in Cornell ever found that kid. But that kid, I've never heard anything like that in my entire life. Have you?
That was hilarious.
God, that was funny.
Yeah.
There's no way. There is no way. It should be called the sanity test, actually. Laugh and...
Yeah. If you don't laugh, you are insane.
Yeah. That yeah, maybe definitely. That's part of what you're supposed to conclude.
I think to bookmark it. That way, you know, whenever you're having a stressful day.
That's right. Exactly right. I think it will stay there. So.
I have a question.
Sure.
Something that a caller brought up earlier Then I had something I wanted to talk to you about that you mentioned. But real quick, what would 700 pounds of dynamite do?
A lot of damage. I mean, a lot of damage. And, you know, we recently had some little jerk who took a trip through the Midwest and put relatively low-level pipe bombs in mailboxes. So you tell me, what do you think 700 pounds of dynamite would do?
No, I don't know. I didn't know how, you know, like if they were... If you're mining and you use dynamite, how much do you use? You know, in relation to anything else, I have no clue about
that. Was a
like
big,
that.
Big stock of mining dynamite.
But that thing that you were talking about, people not flying.
Yes, not doing a lot of elective flying. You know,
right.
For fun kind of flying.
And then it dawned on me, because I work at a hotel in the Smoky Mountain area. It's a big tourist area, and most of our business is people who drive. So we didn't get hurt as much as other areas like your area did shortly after September 11th.
Oh, man, Las Vegas for a long time was really dormant. It
right.
was weird.
And we didn't have as much an effect because, you don't most people that come here don't go on a plane. Well, this season started like a bloody sledgehammer. And it's like everybody's here, and they're here way early. And we were trying to figure out why. And one of my coworkers speculated that perhaps they're trying to get their summer vacation in before anybody starts lobbing nukes at anybody else.
Wow.
And then I thought, wait a minute. You know, maybe these are people who might have gone to D.C. or Disney World or, you know, but now they don't want to get on a plane, so they get in the car and they come here.
Well, in a way, it's a good thing. People will see more of America. People will patronize places like yours. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I just dawned on me. I was like, hey, I bet that's it. But that occurred to me.
Well,
have a good vacation.
Yeah, thank you very much. That'll be not till the 20th of June, so it's a while yet. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello. Going once, going twice, gone. Lost your chance. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, is that me?
That's you.
Well, I listened with great interest to the gentleman you had on from Greenpeace the other night talking about nuclear war and fallout and whatnot.
Harvey Wasserman, yes.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty horrible, too. I wouldn't want any fallout falling on me. So I was thinking of an idea of how to reduce nuclear weapons and possibly their usage. What do you say? Maybe we have a trade-in program for equal mega tonnage of fuel air bombs for nuclear weapons to anybody who wants it.
Well, I don't know what is the equivalent. Nuclear megatonnage of the biggest fuel air bomb we have. Do you?
No, I don't. They're pretty impressive when you watch them on video.
They're very impressive, but I don't think there's much of a megatonnage a comparison. I really don't think there is.
Well, how's about we add in
some... So the parties wouldn't think it would be a fair trade.
Well, how about you add in some anti-missile systems along with those?
You mean to defend against missiles?
Right, and then you give many more of the fuel air bomb tipped missiles and spread them out all over the country so that they're more defensible, and add in anti-missile defense systems with them, and just trade them in.
So, in other words, give the participants new toys.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you could make the offer, sir, but somehow, I picture, let's think, our ambassador walking into the capital of India or Pakistan and sitting down and making this proposal. Perhaps you could tell me how you, as a salesperson ambassador, would sell that to the, the possible warring parties there.
Well, I guess with some of these countries, you couldn't really appeal to their sense of...
No, you could.
to their sense of sanity.
Well, you would walk in and you would say, look, what do you say about a trade? You know, and we all know it's much lower destructive power. So they're going to figure they're going to trade off their stuff. We're just about to have a war and the other side has nukes.
Well, maybe you're right. I think they might listen to me, though. I called in on your out-of-the-box night.
Yes.
I was last caller in, and I was talking about using fuel air bombs to shorten the war. And lo and behold, 3 days later, they were using them.
They were using them. Yeah, they sure did. All right. Well, I appreciate your call very much, but when you figure out how an ambassador would sell that, you be sure and let me know. We could have a... How about a nuclear weapon buyback plan? You know, they got these in the cities, right? They have gun buyback plans. So why don't we have a gigantic nuclear bomb buyback plan? You couldn't give $50, you know, but what do you figure a good 1 kiloton weapon is worth? And that's kind of the range they've got over there. We could do it in raw money, right? We could buy their bombs. Of course, darn, they know how to make more, don't they? West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello there. Going, gone. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. This is JK in Portland, Oregon.
Yes.
And something I heard on your show, I think about 3 months ago.
Yes.
It was called HAARP.
Yes.
HAARP.
Yes.
And on PAX TV last week, they were talking about it on a show, It's Incredible Happenings or something. Anyway, they were talking about I guess the Russians have a similar thing that they've had.
The Russians have one. There's some in Scandinavia. And, of course, there's the big HAARP in Alaska, yes.
Right. So anyway, I went on the internet and looked up woodpecker / Russia.
Woodpecker is no longer used. The woodpecker was used by the Soviet Union, ma'am. It was, so that you know, it was an attempt at over-the-horizon radar. The woodpecker was an annoying, we called it the woodpecker because on shortwave, that's exactly what it sounded like. It sounded like woodpecker, like... Well, maybe this has. Listen. Just what it sounded like on shortwave. And what it was incredibly powerful pulses that were sent bouncing off the ionosphere, returning to Earth, going back to the ionosphere, back to Earth, and in this manner traversing the Earth itself. Now, these were so powerful that the concept was, and we don't know how far the Russians got with it, but the concept was that just like a radar return, the signal would be so strong that if a missile was launched or an airliner was in the air, you would, in essence, have radar that went around the world, you know, looking for strategic reasons. Now, after the Cold War, the Russians discontinued the woodpecker. Now we're in more interesting things like heating the ionosphere. My God, that's dangerous, in my opinion. We're trying to heat or even blow a hole right through the ionospheric layer. That's one of the things they're going to do. Maybe it'll be all right, maybe it won't. And then, of course, there's a lot of other baggage that Harp may, in fact, carry with it. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir. Turn your radio off, please.
Yeah, I know. This is Lou from Akron, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
And just want you to know, I said something to our astronomy club to you before you banned mail. We have star parties, public events at the local state park. We have our 12-inch observatory. And we follow the space station, all the satellites very actively. And the UFO club pretty much tapes you, and we have you at our meetings and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
I am honored.
Okay, I'll let somebody else call it now.
All right, thank you very much. Very honored, thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, how about a shadow person attack story?
Attack story?
Yeah.
Somebody fast-blasted me a little while ago. Have I ever seen a shadow person? And I've seen these little flicks in the corner of my eye. I've never seen one straight on. You have an actual attack story. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. This happened back in 1993, about 3 days after I did an Indian sweat lodge. I don't know if that had anything to do with it or not.
I'm betting it would.
Might have. I woke up about 6 o'clock one morning. It just didn't daylight outside, and I felt something kind of pushing on the side of my bed, and I thought it was my dog.
Right.
I had this bulldog back then. He's dead now. And, you know, it felt like his paw was there on the edge of the bed. And even in my mind's eye, I could kind of see him, you know.
Yep.
I could see his face.
Yes.
Next to my face. And I started to reach up there and put my arm around him, you know, ruffle his head and pet him a little bit.
Pet him?
Yeah. I thought it was my dog, you know.
Oh, well, I see.
And, yeah.
I see. Yes,
Yeah. Put my arm around him. I thought, wait a minute, my dog's outside.
Yeah.
And I just froze. And I opened my eyes and looked over there, and I was staring face to face with something that looked like my dog. But it was solid black.
Sounds like a cartoon almost. I mean, I can picture you freezing.
Yeah.
I would, too.
Okay.
All right, well, here's my comment. Look.
Well, you there's said more
you,
to it.
I understand. Okay. We'll get to it. You said it was a sweat lodge. You went to a sweat lodge, right?
Yes.
When you do a sweat lodge, you get into an altered state.
Right.
You intentionally put yourself in a severely altered state. So, yes, when you suggested there was a connection, you're dead right. I would say almost for sure there's a connection. Go ahead.
Well, I've never seen anything like that before or since.
Understood.
This thing was like just inches from my face. Looked exactly like my dog, except it was black as coal. And I could see the reflection of the the light coming from the hallway through my bedroom door in its eyes.
In its
That's how real this thing was looking.
Gotcha.
And I started raising up away from it. Same time it started pulling away from me. And we were just, our eyes were locked at each other. And I'd always wondered what I'd do if I ever saw anything like this. I thought maybe I'd jump out of my skin and run screaming.
Uh-huh.
But no, I felt this energy come over me. Like all these bells were going off in my head, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I felt this charge of electricity going through my whole body.
No, we have to hurry. The show is ending, actually.
Anyway, as it raised up, it started transforming, and its body took on that of a humanoid shape, stood up to about 6 feet.
Really?
Its nose grew longer, horns grew up out of it, and its ears grew longer, and it looked like a goat man.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we stood there looking at each other for about 5 more seconds, and then it made a move toward me, and I'm trained in martial arts, and naturally I reacted. I blocked its hand reaching out, punched it in the stomach, and it broke apart into this flickering energy field made up of these bands of greenish-yellow energy, and these bands just kind of floated toward the floor and looked like feathers floating. I watched this stuff settle into the carpet, and when it settled into the carpet, it kind of flickered around like flames. After the flames went out, I put my hand down there.
Sir, we're running way out of time. Were you able to vacuum it up?
No.
No? All right, well, I surely appreciate the story. That's pretty good. Karate kick and just disintegration. I wish we'd had time for more. We don't. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. You all have a great weekend out there. Good night.